Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige, and together we are going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, psychic realm, and most importantly, our self-worth. Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to episode 48, Fuck Witches Get Money, alternatively titled, Witch Better Have My Money. It was really hard to choose between the two. In the end, I went with the one with the swear word. I don't know why. But today, we are talking about money. Not necessarily how to attract money with spells or magic, but about applying monetary value to psychic and spiritual services. Thanks to the internet, it's become easier to access these services over long distances without leaving home and for prices you're fully aware of in advance. Likewise, you can do a lot of research on a psychic you're planning to patronize, whether you're doing so online or IRL. Yet there are still people who think charging for psychic services is wrong or unethical, probably because there are still criminals who use a psychic ruse to scam people out of their savings. So I'm going to talk a little bit about legit versus scam psychic services, the kind of labor that goes into a reading, and our feelings about money, ethics about money, and why you should absolutely start charging for your own psychic or spiritual labor if you're currently doing it for free, and why you should be willing to pay for it, and ways to do all of that without feeling, you know, slimy. Slimy is a good word when it comes to money, I think. So not surprisingly, I guess, making money as a spiritual worker is something that I think about a lot. And I mean like a lot, all the time. Money has never been my strong suit or my superpower. And honestly, in general, money is something I have an extremely contentious relationship with. I struggle with counting money, saving money, budgeting. In general, I struggle with truly understanding the value of money and any of those numbers. I have a learning disability called dyscalculia that makes numbers and the value of numbers kind of difficult for me, which contributes for sure, but it's mostly an emotional issue for me. I have almost always associated money with kind of negative things. So when people have money, you know, they're selfish and cruel. Money changes people. And when people are denied money, they're desperate and afraid. People kill or maim or kidnap and in general just hurt other people and the planet all in the name of saving money. Half of those wars out there that we talk about that were all about religion were actually all about money. Even the Salem witch trials was about money and property. A few of the accused were actually wealthy or well off or just had more than some other people. And when they confessed to witchcraft, their property was seized and then, you know, given away or sold, often to those people who had accused them in the first place. This is the reason Giles Corey refused to confess to being a witch and why he was crushed to death. It's so that they could not steal his stuff and it would go to his family instead. Isn't that wild? That's so wrong. So as a kid, I lived in this quintessential, like, blue-collar, lower-middle-class neighborhood that I just adored. I loved it there. Despite my difficult home situation, I loved the neighborhood, I loved the people, I loved the school I went to, I loved the community, I loved everything. You know, I had all these dreams about living there as an older person. Like, when I grew up and was a teenager, I could take the city bus to school. Like, this was a big dream I had. I never even thought it was possible for me to have my own car, but I was very excited about the idea of taking the city bus to school. I say that now, my sister always laughs because she did take the city bus. She's like, wasn't that great? I know that now, but come on. It was also like within walking distance to the only mall in town. So like that was like when I was a kid, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so great. I can't wait to be a teenager. So I lived in, you know, this kind of poor neighborhood with poor kids who didn't have a lot, but we always had fun. And I felt like my friends there were very true and very honest. I felt like I could trust my neighbors and my teachers. I loved the school I went to and I just felt like I belonged. And then when I was 9, so yes, this is all when I was very young, we moved to like an affluent suburban town just outside the city. And like everything changed. The people were completely different. The ways that people interacted with each other was different. The things that meant anything to these people, the way the school worked, you know, the cars they drove, the way they kept their houses, everything seemed to be colored by money. The town was even like overwhelmingly white, overwhelmingly white versus the more like, you know, diverse and multicultural neighborhood and school that I had been going to. You know, it's so weird. I went from having a bunch of friends that were just all different. You know, I'm not going to sit here and list races and ethnicities and stuff, but they were all different. They were all from different backgrounds and, you know, some even practiced different religions. And that was all very normal to this place where everyone was white and everyone was Catholic or Protestant. Everyone was Catholic or Protestant and everyone was white and almost everyone had money and I didn't really. And so, you know, I went from very much belonging in the world to being like, whoa, I don't belong in this world at all. My entire value system was, and, you know, it continues to be, just in direct contrast to those people and that town that I lived in. I don't live there anymore, of course. As soon as I was old enough, I bailed. especially since in that town we were like dirt poor, like living in a rickety shack, not always having our utilities on, poor. So I very much stood out. And it just became them versus me, with money being that hard line that neither of us could apparently cross. But I never really thought that this was a bad thing necessarily. I thought it was difficult, but I didn't want to be more like those people. I am proud to not be a money-hungry person and to not be someone who lets the amount of money someone has influence what I think about their character or their personality or their heart. I'm proud to not be a money-hungry person. But in adulthood, I found that that idea from when I was younger is still there and it's been growing. And now I've really struggled to understand the value of money, and it's caused a lot of pain and anxiety. It causes a lot of instability in my life, and feelings of instability are extremely hard for any human beings to deal with. We have to feel like we have a place to belong, like we have a safe place to be, like we have enough food to eat and air to breathe and water to drink and stuff like that. When we don't, our entire like body and brain just goes into time to survive mode, you know? I feel a lot of resentment towards money and towards people that pay me. I think this is a big problem with my entire scattered job history, is that when I'm getting paid to do a job and then you disrespect me, I feel like you think you own me. And you don't. No one does. And to me, that is a very strong feeling. Like, I will quit a job very shortly after feeling that. And there is a level of privilege here, of course. I just want to acknowledge that right away. But I feel a lot of resentment towards money and towards people that pay me. And oftentimes getting money or being given money was, and still kind of feels like, a bad thing. It feels like something to be ashamed of. For years, I believed that if I was working towards making money or having money, or if I was asking people even to just pay me fairly, that I was betraying my values. But what I was actually doing was betraying myself and my own dreams of just independence. Independence and owning my own house are my lifelong dream. It's literally all I've ever wanted. I want to be alone and not truly need anyone to survive, which would mean that anyone that's in my life is there because I want them to be. Any stuff that's in my life is there because I want them to be, because I value it. To me, that is just the epitome of living that good life. And unfortunately, money is necessary to do that in this world. Very necessary. And it's quite a pain in the ass. 3.5 years into making this podcast and doing this work, I do live off of what I make. I don't have a part-time job or anything. Though it's much less than minimum wage. much less than minimum wage. I make in a month about what I would make, I think, maybe every 2 weeks at current minimum wage. Not easy. But anyways, money isn't even in the top 10 motivations I have ever had for making this podcast. You know, that's not why I started, and that's not why I kept it going. And in terms of what I personally get out of doing this work, money is probably the least valuable thing on that list, for sure. So if you're an astrology person, I know some of you astrology people are already wondering. So here's the rundown. I have Venus in Scorpio. My sun is in Capricorn in the second house, and the second house is in Sagittarius, and my Jupiter is in Pisces. I know. Idealism and emotion are my currency, but whatever, let's keep going. The truth is, if I don't get paid to do this work, I can no longer do this work. I'd have to stop. I'd have to get, you know, multiple jobs or one incredibly awful job where I work minimum 6 days a week, 12 hours a day at a factory, like a lot of the people that live here. I wouldn't be able to do this at all. I certainly couldn't learn as much as I have in the last few years to be able to have, you know, like the content, the discussions that happen because of this podcast. You all know that starting and operating any kind of business costs money, but what about starting or continuing a spiritual journey? Does that cost money? Is it actually fair to say it costs me money to learn this spiritual path, so I should be able to get paid for that labor if I choose to? And of course it is. Of course it's fair to say that, because if you take out the fact that it's supposed to be this spiritual thing, it's a skill that you're developing. You're paying money to develop the skill. Maybe you're taking courses, maybe you're buying books, what have you. And based on that education that you've been paying for, you now have a skill that you can market as a business. And just because that skill is spiritual in nature doesn't mean he... Anyways, there's people who think you shouldn't charge for any sort of spiritual business. You should only do that for free because it's like a gift to the world. And it's odd. And it's not just people who are unwilling to pay for spiritual services, but there's a lot of people who have really great spiritual skills and are afraid to charge money. They do free readings all the time. And when you think about it, if they're doing free readings every single day, they're doing hours and hours and hours of work every single day, completely unpaid, to help someone else. And you know what? I'm going to guarantee you that 50% of those readings are people asking how they can make more money. It's a very strange system. It took me more than a year after starting the podcast and living in total and debilitating poverty. Like, I had literally nothing. I couldn't eat. I couldn't afford toilet paper. I couldn't afford pads or tampons. Like, it was the worst level of poverty that I've ever been in. And I had to live like that for about a year before I agreed, okay, I cannot be mentally healthy and live this way. This isn't working. But I absolutely cannot stop doing this. What I do, this is not just, you know, my job, it's my life purpose. But to be able to do it, I need to accept money to do this so that I can continue to live this purpose and share it with people. And once I started accepting money from people because of the podcast, my whole life changed. And my work didn't somehow become more valuable just because people were willing to pay money for it. Not to me, anyways. A lot of people think that. A lot of people who know me think, you know, that the podcast became valuable when people started paying money. But that is absolutely not how I've ever felt. I feel like the work I did in that first year when I was, you know, starving to death, is just as valuable as the work that I'm doing now. And I got just as much work out of it then as I do now. It just wasn't monetary. I always knew, just even when I didn't totally know, that my work was valuable as is. I know that this is something that is good, that I need to do, that is putting good things out into the world and is making my life better and is helping other people. That has value whether I get paid or not. And the fact that my work has value to the people who listen without costing them any money is just, it's bizarre, but it's amazing. It's a wonderful feeling. A lot of the really great emails and messages that I get from people often say something like, I wish I could afford to sign up for your Patreon or give you money or whatever. Your work means so much to me. And that is honestly like the sweetest and saddest thing that I hear on a totally regular basis. I've totally felt that way. And I've even sent an email that says like almost that exact thing to artists and authors and stuff that I really love. But that email itself means more to me than any, you know, dollar you could drop into a digital account. That's not to say that I'm not grateful to all those people, especially the patrons on Patreon, because that's my main income source, right? I live off of it. And I legit sob every month when I get paid, like out of gratitude and that little touch of shame that I'm still trying to work through. Yes, I still feel shame when it comes to money, and maybe I always will, but that's okay. So if you do support the podcast financially, I want you to think about it this way. You're not just supporting me and the show, although you are, trust me, but you're also supporting all of those people who say, this means so much to me and I wish I could afford to give you money. The money that you give to support all of this, you know, pays it forward to all of those people in terms of information or support or work or whatever. And that makes me feel really, really good, knowing that the money that I get is used to help other people and, you know, help me live my purpose, because I deserve nice things, and not things, but I deserve a nice life. That just makes all the difference to me in the world. So that payday sob I have at the beginning of the month is infinitely different than the way I used to sob after every paycheck I got from, like, Chevron, when I worked at one of their gas stations the same year they dumped a bunch of oil into the fucking ocean. Every other Thursday when I cashed that check, I felt like a bag of shit, a bigger and bigger bag of shit every single time. And I kept thinking, I can't believe I'm taking money from these people. I can't believe that my, like, work and labor and brain are going to support a company that dumps oil in the ocean. And I was working at like a gas station at the convenience store. You know, I'm not one of the higher ups. And I felt like a garbage bag. No one should feel bad for needing money to survive. And yet, of course, so, so many of us do. And that's because there are many, many people who use money to hurt other people, who hoard it and lord it over the rest of us, who take more than their fair share and leave others just dying in the streets, or, you know, their children rotting away in literal concentration camps on the floor. But money isn't what's doing that. People are what's doing that. People who are driven by greed and avarice and who don't truly understand the value of anything except money. And you might think, oh yeah, that's way worse. I'm so glad I'm not some rich asshole and I'm just some broke ass. I feel way better. And I'd probably agree because, you know, I'm hella prejudiced against rich assholes and I am a broke ass. But part of coming to terms with my issues with money is remembering and realizing the damage that my negative greed caused other people in the planet, you know? My desire to avoid money caused me a lot of fear and anxiety and depression that negatively affected my already kind of shaky mental health and made that a lot worse. And in that state, I hurt a lot of people. It caused me to need to rely on my family a lot, a family that doesn't really support each other, not really emotionally, not really financially. You know, my parents are not the parents you ask for money. I needed more support from my dad than either of my siblings did. And I know that that's been hard on him in more ways than just financial. For years, friends had to come down to my financial level to go out on whatever, to go out for the day, to go to dinner, to go on vacation, to do anything fun with me. And a lot of those times, if they really truly wanted me there, they even had to outright pay for me to be involved. That's not a super fun feeling. A friend recently asked me to be one of her bridesmaids and was so concerned about the financial burden because she knows that I don't have a lot extra, that she almost didn't ask me. And she tried to let me off the hook 100 times over a few months, you know, just in case things are getting difficult. I just want to make sure that, you know, this isn't putting financial strain on you. I want to make sure you're at my wedding. And if all you can do is attend, that's totally okay. And that just, oh man, she wasn't trying to hurt me. She was trying to be wonderful. And she is wonderful. But inside, I felt this little bit of, you know, this little pang of shame. And even now, you know, the bachelorette party is coming up at a time when my budget is especially strict. And the maid of honor is like, don't worry, we're going to, you know, we're going to absorb the cost and you can pay us back if you really want, or you can contribute something else and blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, oh my God, I feel like such a shit bag. I'm a very independent person and I don't ask for money ever. Like, I don't borrow money. Even getting a student loan, I was just like, oh, I don't want to borrow money from anyone. But I also know that the people who love me just aren't going to sit back and let me drown. They're not going to. Oh, I hate this about myself. Sorry. It also affected the way I spent my money. So when I'm poor, I have to spend lower amounts of money, but I still need the same things, which means I buy lower quality products. I buy stuff that is not made here in North America. I buy, you know, fast fashion that is not going to last long and it might not even be fully biodegradable, that's going to sit in a landfill. Same with anything else, you know what I mean? Like, I had to skimp on buying any sort of cleaners that are better for the environment and get the stuff that is cheaper. I had to buy items that I knew were going to fall apart in a few months because I needed them right then. And the only amount of money I had to contribute to that was very, very low. That's bad for the environment. And that's not something we all need to think about. Your survival is way more important. It's just, it's another facet of how having no money and refusing to make money hurt other people and in general kind of hurt the planet. It's antithetical to who I am as a person, right? The point here with all of this is that it's all about balance. Refusing to share resources hurts people, but so does refusing to have any resources of your own, whether you're doing that consciously or not. I was not doing that consciously, of course. I'm still working on, you know, getting myself more into the middle of that particular spectrum, but my emotional feelings about taking and having money are really one of the biggest barriers for me. There are external barriers, of course, there's always that, but I can't do anything about those so much. But how I feel and my emotional feelings about money are something that I can do. They are a barrier that I can break down for myself. Though I will say, my ability to survive and run a business on a little triple digit number every month is something I am very proud of, but still brutal. Being poor has taught me, though, that I can be poor. I am very, very good at surviving, and I never thought I was very resilient before, but being so, so poor that I literally have nothing and no money coming in and no way to get any money and not just completely dying in a heap or whatever, is very empowering once you're out of that situation. I'm still poor, but not that poor. So let's talk a little bit about the difference between someone who is just using their spirituality skills, their spiritual skills, to create a life for themselves, who is just trying to get paid for their work, and someone who is using a spiritual ruse to scam you. So I'm a really big fan of the comedian John Oliver and of his show Last Week Tonight with John Oliver on HBO. It's fantastic, honestly. It's really well done. Most of us met him on The Daily Show as a correspondent who was very funny. very British, makes lots of really fun British jokes. He was also in Community, and he did stand-up. You know, he's a comedian. He's hilarious. And since about April 2014, John has had this show called Last Week Tonight, where he covers news items. But what he covers are some of the most controversial news items. In his very first episode, he covered the death penalty. Because he doesn't believe in the death penalty, and he just blows your mind with these facts about how awful these already awful things really are. So he talks about the death penalty, he talked about net neutrality, the tobacco industry, gerrymandering, Donald Trump debt, and like civil forfeiture. Like, not everything was super interesting of a topic, but his segments on them are so eye-opening. And they're also still really funny. And since he's on HBO, right, he has free reign to make fun of, you know, corporations and stuff. Because they don't have, HBO's got enough money to support those shows, right? They don't have advertisers that can control what happens in the show. So he has free reign to make fun of corporations, mega churches, individual celebrities, basically any other right wing or social nonsense that he can come up with, that him and his writers can come up with. It's fantastic. And I watch it all the time to keep up with American, especially, news. And to explain a lot of things to me. You know, there's a lot of individual topics that, or words that I've heard and never really understood. So gerrymandering is a really good example. I didn't know what that was. And there was a whole video and I was like, okay, cool. Let's figure this out. Recently, he had one on the lethal injection. Again, the death penalty. We're not going to debate the death penalty on this show, I don't think, but I'm very anti-death penalty, so I love these episodes especially, and the one he did on lethal injection, it taught me a lot that I absolutely had no idea. As someone with an opinion already formed, I didn't know half that shit. Didn't change my opinion, it made it stronger, but that's what I mean. I learn all the time from this show, and it's very honest, and it's entertaining. In March, and I know this is a couple months now, but in March, John tackled psychics, especially mediums, the ones who speak with the dead. Earlier, John had done an episode called Televangelists that exposed how easy it was to start a church in the U.S. Fantastic bit. And then the corruption and greed of, you know, TV mega church pastors, all of those really big, and I'm not trying to call out anyone in specific, but I don't know any other names besides Joel Osteen. So Joel Osteen is the example here. Now, if you like Joel Osteen, I have no idea if he's actually a scam artist. He's just the only TV mega church pastor that I can think of. So after watching that episode, I knew that his priority, when I saw that it was about psychics, was to expose scams that target innocent people and to make sure that his audience knows that this is something more than just a joke. This isn't just, you know, a funny joke that we say all the time, because we joke all the time about TV evangelists. Come on. And I knew, you know, the psychic segment would be focused on psychics that he believed were scam artists or that were raking in really suspicious amounts of cash. But what I didn't expect was actually a bunch of really rude and derogatory, like completely white nonsense from baby boomers. But that is absolutely what this segment was. I absolutely don't understand where this segment come from. Even other people I know who are not, you know, in this industry, in the legitimate psychic industry, we're confused because are psychics in the news? Like, are psychic scams really a hot news item right now? I didn't know they were. As someone who searches psychic everything on the internet all the time, I had no idea. I knew psychic scams happened, but I didn't know that they were a hot news item. So John starts his segment here, and the first psychic pictured in the segment, the first one that comes up, is Miss Cleo, the infamous TV psychic from the 90s who was charged with fraud in 2002. The photo he shows is actually watermarked and says it's from the year 2000. And I had to roll my eyes because talk about old news. 19 years ago? Are you kidding? Most of the young people that are becoming interested in psychic phenomena now weren't even alive to see her middle of the night commercials, John Oliver. I mean, come on, man. His main topic is what he calls the most insidious part of the psychic industry, which is mediums, who are psychics who have the ability to talk to ghosts, spirits, those who've, you know, moved on. And he gave a bunch of examples, like John Edward and Teresa Caputo and Sylvia Brown. If you're under the age of 30, you're probably wondering, what? Who are you talking about? You might know Teresa Caputo as the Long Island medium. Sylvia Brown has been dead for literal years. And I have not seen John Edward on TV since I was a teenager. Are these really that relevant? I can't believe it. So what John failed to realize, and even mention in the segment, of course, is that there's a big difference between the psychic industry that he's talking about and the genuine psychic industry. What he's talking about are parlor trick psychics, which is a form of entertainment. And I don't want to talk shit about psychic parlors. I don't want to say that every time you see a psychic parlor that has, you know, a neon sign in the window or fortunes told or palmistry or anything like that, that it's instantly garbage, because it's not. But those are more of what he is thinking. Those are the parlor trick psychics that he is thinking of. And most of those are just for entertainment, and they say that to you. He explains, you know, it's laughed off as kind of a guilty pleasure in going to the psychic. And he explains how many of these mediums use mentalism tricks, like cold reading, to read a room and to read people's individual responses. You know, they read how people respond to the information that they give out. Some will even outright research clients in advance and then present that info like a genuine psychic impression. And he's right, because there absolutely are people that do this. And there are people who have been scammed out of their entire life's fortune, life savings, their home, everything by these scam artists. And I always respect exposing that and standing up for the people who have been taken advantage of that. The problem that I found with his particular segment and analysis was there was zero effort on his part to differentiate between parlor trick psychics and genuine spiritual service providers and practitioners. He even joked that he didn't consult with real psychics because psychics aren't real and anyone who claims to be psychic is lying. And like, I took a little bit of beef with that. Come on, John, that's rude. Rude. In his televangelist segment that I mentioned, it was the same. You know, he was talking about televangelists who scam money out of their followers via letter campaigns and religious threats and pay money to get into heaven type crap. He also talked about how easy it was to set up a tax-exempt church and did it himself, right? He made his own little church. Super great episode. Honestly, it's one of the best segments that he has done. You know, being a comedian, he made the church and he called it Our Lady of Perpetual Exemption, which was great, and performed a really hilarious skit about it with Rachel Dratch from Saturday Night Live, who was fantastic, dressed up like the Long Island medium, Jersey accent, crazy long nails, and just totally, oh, sorry, that was her in the psychic one, but she was spoofing these Southern televangelists to big laughs, you know, so she was kind of like a Tammy Faye Baker type situation. And I laughed my butt off. I laughed my ass off at Rachel Dratch because she's amazing. She's hilarious. And she came back in the psychic episode, the psychic segment, and she was dressed like the Long Island medium with Sylvia Brown nails and just Jersey accent and everything. And it was still hilarious. I laughed. I laughed all the way through the segment, even though I was mad. But the most important difference between this one and the one on the televangelists is that in that one, he clearly differentiates between televangelists and real churches and real, you know, Christian spiritual people who do good in their communities. He never actually mocked any real Christian beliefs, just the practices of these unscrupulous scam artists. The average Christian could watch the segment and know that this guy was not disrespecting their faith, but exposing a toxic part of it. But this was not the case during the psychic segment for those who practice any sort of religion that includes psychic work or mediumship, or who work in this genuine psychic industry. Like I said, I laughed all the way through. I can take a joke. Don't think that's it. I know that there are tons of scam artist psychics out there. I know that every single psychic is not legit. I know that a lot of people use a psychic ruse to get money from people. And I personally feel offended when I hear someone has used a psychic ruse in a fraudulent manner, because fraud is wrong. Defrauding anyone is wrong in any way. And I don't care if someone believes in psychics or not. I don't. I don't care if John Oliver believes in psychics or psychic phenomenon. I don't care. Do you think everyone I know is like an open-minded witch? I'm Italian and French-Canadian, y'all, and I'm part of the first generation on either side of my family to not be baptized Catholic or even at all. Like, I've had to calm down aunts and uncles because they were so sure I was going to hell because I wasn't baptized. Like, I've had to calm them down. But I do care if someone's a dick and makes fun of me to my face. And that's kind of how it felt during the segment. One thing that irritated me the most was that this was all so outdated. Who's buying tickets to John Edward shows, and where are those happening? Sylvia Brown is literally dead, and we knew she was ridiculous before she even died. And psychic parlors, I get so excited when I see one because they're kind of this novelty, you know what I mean? Like, I've been seeing them more just because the aesthetic is very cute. I love the neon signs and everything. I really want one of those psychic neon signs. But they are a novelty. And a lot of people who know anything about psychics, they're not wandering into, you know, Madame Sylvia's mainstream psychic fortunes told, flashing in neon signs. They go to a witch or a new age store or a psychic expo. They ask around, right? And then when they do that, no one in that new age store sends anyone to Madame Sylvia's parlor trick psychics. It's actually like completely separate. It's a separate industry. A lot of times if you go into a real witch shop and ask them about where to find these parlor trick psychics, they might not even know where they are. It could be right down the street and they have no idea because it's just not in their, it's not part of that world. And that really bugged me. I also noticed that every single psychic pictured or featured in the segment, outside of Miss Cleo, of course, was white, middle to upper class, and over the age of 40. The people seeking those services were also white and over the age of 40. There was no mention of a psychic industry that features tons of young people, queer people, people of color, no mention of that at all. It didn't focus on anyone who does not scam their clients. Not one single psychic who isn't a scam. Didn't focus on psychics that weren't on TV or a TV hit. Like, reality TV is, it's just a name. Just because it's called reality TV doesn't mean that it's actually real, y'all. You can't just take, you know, Teresa Caputo as an example of all mediums. That's just not the way things work. And the problem with that is that, you know, middle-class white people in their 40s aren't John's target demographic. That's not who's watching this show. Or at the very least, they're usually the ones that are kind of the butt of the joke. You know, the Fox News crowd. Last Week Tonight has a very, very similar demographic to The Daily Show. So what you have are liberal academics in their 20s and early 30s. That's me. I'm his audience. The same demographic that is abandoning organized religion at staggering rates has become more and more open to crystals and yoga, who don't have the money to give thousands to scam artists over the phone every month. I mean, these people are still paying too much for their student loans, you know, 10 years after they graduated. In short, the psychics he showed are not the psychics his target audience is even interacting with. So now he's made all of these sweeping generalizations about an entire spiritual movement and industry that aren't even entirely accurate and aren't relevant to the people who are watching this show. And this hurts all of those young entrepreneurs of color or who are queer or who are disabled or who are marginalized, who have found that they can use their spiritual skills to gain independence through business. Another thing that is just kind of a personal pet peeve of mine is when people act like psychics and magicians are like completely different things. Like magicians are somehow totally okay. You know, that's a respectable career, but not that like, not that there's no one who doesn't think magicians are garbage, but you know, being a magician is fine. You know who uses cold reading to make money and to entertain is magicians. Magicians do that. Oliver noted that, you know, 8 million years ago when Miss Cleo's network of psychic readings was, or psychic readers was in operation, they brought in over $1 billion, with a cool half of that billion being profit. And this was like, you know, this hideous thing. And I'm going to say $1 billion is crazy. But what bugged me was I was like, 1 billion? Like, do you know how much money magicians have brought in? David Copperfield made $61 million last year. And his net worth is $875 million. Penn and Teller made $30 million. Chris Angel made $16 million. And David Blaine made $13.5 million. And that's all in 1 year. And those guys have been operating, all of them, for more than a fucking decade. I actually attended a Penn & Teller show last year. I was bored to tears. Honestly, it wasn't very good. And then they started trashing psychics and astrology as if it's any fucking dumber than their magic show. And I was like, are you kidding? They use the same methods as parlor trick psychics have been using since the days of, you know, spiritualism in Victorian times. Like, making millions of dollars, just getting as many TV shows and Vegas engagements as they can, touring for decades at a time. What the hell? Here's a fun note. Magic, magician magic, this is an industry dominated by men that doesn't offer any sort of personal service. It's pure entertainment. It's dominated by men, and most of the ticket holders to those shows are men. Whereas the psychic industry, whether it's legit or not, these industries are mainly dominated by women. And they offer a personalized service that could be deemed a compassionate service. Magicians, no matter the size of the crowd, are in it to show off their hard-won skill and their creativity and to make money and put on a show. Which is fine. I'm not saying that I judge that, by the way. Psychics, depending on the size of the crowd and the location and the method of reading and a whole bunch of other variables, have incredibly varied motivations, ranging from making money to making a difference, to helping people, to fulfilling some sort of spiritual calling. There's nothing about either group that makes one better than the other, or isn't subject to laws that force them to explain their services or for entertainment purposes. Every single psychic you visit, whether it's in a New Age shop, a psychic parlor, at a carnival or festival, or at a psychic expo, whatever, they all have to have some sort of notice somewhere that their services are for entertainment purposes only, that they cannot guarantee how true anything that they say is, and that's all because the law requires them to do that. And there's nothing about either group that isn't totally and completely exploitable for the purpose of scamming people. You can get just as scammed by someone who considers themselves more of a magician style magic practitioner as you can as a fucking psychic or TV medium. I might know more people who have lost money to people using magician techniques than I have to people actually doing psychic readings. Absolutely. And you'll never convince me that the reason magicians are cool and real psychics aren't isn't because of some man shit. Because it is. It is. Women get hanged for being witches and practicing magic. Or get hanged for quote-unquote being witches and quote-unquote practicing magic. But men get to co-opt it and build an entire career and industry off of it. Old fucking news, right? Almost as old of news as Miss Cleo. So I still love John Oliver and I still love Last Week Tonight, and you know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't laugh all the way through the segment. The fuck ups of some of those TV mediums is absolutely hilarious because I hate them. Those people should not be telling anyone that their loved ones are 100% for sure definitely dead if they haven't seen the body, as far as I'm concerned. If you didn't kill that person or see their body in the morgue, you don't 100% know for sure that they are dead. At all. At all. I also believe it's important to educate people about scams, any scams, because scams are wrong. Scamming people are wrong, but it doesn't matter if that scam is, you know, a sleazy used car salesman or a black widow or a fake psychic. It just doesn't matter. Psychics aren't a scam. Psychic phenomena isn't a scam. Scam artists are a scam. And that's something that John just really did not make clear, and it bothered me. And it didn't just bother me because, you know, it gives people a reason to disrespect the psychic industry, right? To just think it's garbage. To, you know, demand free services without paying. And it also makes people that have these spiritual or psychic skills that think they want to get into business for themselves using those skills, that what they're doing is unethical, or that it's wrong, or that charging for their services is not right. That for whatever reason, this beautiful gift needs to be given freely to the entire world. And that's just not helpful or feasible in our modern society.
Clever Kim's Curios is happy to be a proud supporter of the Fat Feminist Witch podcast. Clever Kim's Curios makes jewelry as unique as those who are drawn to it. Featured on shows like Charmed and The Vampire Diaries, this is worn art not just drawn from nature, but featuring the power and beauty of nature itself. Using ethically sourced and purified bones, fur, and feathers, as well as magical crystals, runes, and motifs in her designs, Clever Kim's Curios resonate with innate energy, grace, and magic. Find the perfect piece of jewelry to harmonize with your inner beauty at cleverkimcurios.com or on Instagram at cleverkimscurios. Listeners of the Fat Feminist Witch podcast can take 10% off all orders. Just use the coupon code FFWITCH at checkout. That's Clever Kim's Curios for jewelry as unique as those drawn to it.
The biggest criticism, as far as I can tell, that is lobbed towards psychics and magical service providers is that they charge a high price. People think, you know, $60 for a half hour's worth of work, you know, or maybe it's more and that just seems extravagant, right? Maybe it's a couple hundred for a single reading that's only going to last a half hour to an hour. I wish I could tell you that there is this number that you hit. There's no magic amount that is instantly too much money. Like, I don't have that for you. There's no way to know just by the price whether or not this service is a scam. Sometimes it just seems like too much money because you're cheap. I'm cheap. I've been poor. It could just be you. But there's also a lot of other reasons why what you think is $60 for a half hour's worth of work, why that is incorrect. Sometimes the price seems high because you assume that person is working the same 8+ hours in a day that you are, and that they get paid $60 cash with no overhead every single hour or half hour. And now that I say it like that, I bet you probably feel a little bit silly. Because of course that's not how being an independent contractor works. You've gotten haircuts, right? You've gone to the salon. That all that money that you hand over for the haircut, every single dollar does not go into the pocket of the hairstylist. There are tons of overhead payments, and it's the same with any sort of psychic service. Psychics have to pay rent or pay vendors' fees. They have to put aside their own taxes out of all their money, right? Because they're an independent contractor. They pay their travel and transportation costs. If it's an out-of-town gig, they pay for hotels and food and all of that. And I've never seen a psychic who works out of a store as a guest. Like the stores I worked at, we would have guest psychics come in. They always bought a whole heap of products just to support the business, you know, on their final day. They would buy a few books and some crystals and some candles. Anything that was specific to the business, they would buy our branded items just to support the business. So, you know, there are costs associated with working in the psychic industry, and some are definitely, definitely getting hella rich. But the average actual psychic, no, they've got all those fees. They're working a job that they love, and they have a responsibility to keep their business afloat while providing this service. And money is necessary for that. The other problem with this is that it doesn't factor in the psychic part of the labor that is involved with giving a reading. And to be fair, most people don't really know what that entails. So let's talk about it for a little bit. Using a psychic ability in an intentional and specific way like that, like when you're reading for a person, that takes a lot of energy, spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical energy. Connecting on such a deep level with multiple strangers in a day can be scary. It can be hard. It can be awesome and beautiful. It can be tiring, or it can be just plain awful and garbage. I mean, I know you guys get bad vibes off of people. You know what kind of nasty metaphysical garbage gets attached to all sorts of different kinds of people. People that don't even realize, you know, it's there. Now imagine, you know, you're working in the service industry. You have to smile and be super polite to a very belligerent customer. Imagine if you also have to do that with her dark psychic trash monster and then give both those motherfuckers a refund over something really dumb, like you would in any other service industry. Doesn't that sound terrible? It sounds terrible. And those super insidious mediums that John was talking about, not the famous ones, because whatever. Those mediums, if they're legit, are surrounded at all times by 10 times the amount of people that you are. And that medium is the only one that those ghosts can communicate with. So they do. They talk, they touch, they bother, they mislead, they try to trick, or maybe even they just fawn over that medium because they need to talk to somebody who can see and hear them, or they have a really important message that absolutely needs to get passed along. Legit, as someone who doesn't really like people, alive or not, this is the exact reason that mediumship sounds like one of the hardest, you know, psychic gifts to me. I can't imagine living in a world where I'm surrounded by people all the time. And you can't make them go, you can't call the cops, you can't get them out of here. I mean, eventually you learn to work with your whatever. Eventually you figure it out, I'm sure. But that's just something you got to deal with all the time. I think I'd rather have something else awful, like psychic smelling and have to like breathe in everybody's stinky aura junk. And that would be a fair trade if it meant that I could pee alone for the rest of my life. That's hard. That's a lot of stuff, right? And even without speaking to ghosts or connecting with the dead, psychic work takes a lot. It takes energy, it takes focus, it takes time, and a lot of times it takes prep. You know, psychics are responsible for their table and their display. They're responsible for adjusting their tone and behavior for every individual customer. They often care about each one of those people that comes through, even if it's just for that amount of time, and that takes a lot. Online readers have all of that work and then all of the work of building an online business, along with trying to get the information from this person via long distance methods, like without ever meeting this person or ever getting a feel for their vibe in actual person. And that is a lot of work. Like I said, I don't love being with people, so I personally prefer doing long distance tarot readings because, you know, for hours before I even sit down to pull a single card, I can concentrate on that person. I can concentrate on their vibe, get a good handle for who they are. I can concentrate on their story and the characters in their story and the issue at hand. And I have all of this stuff already gathered. So by the time I actually sit down and start pulling cards, I have a whole bunch of information and emotions that I have psychically collected to help me add context to the reading. And then reading the cards and the interpretation can take me a really long time. I mean, I can take that time because no one's looking directly at me, right? Being on the clock is hard. It's very hard. So I can take extra time because I like to. But that takes a lot of extra time. Like, that can even take me a couple of hours. And I mean, not to blow my own horn, but I think my readings are pretty dope. You know, I definitely see the value of taking all that time. Those 3-card readings I do online are scary ass accurate. Like, I have people messaging me about that all the time. But when it's all said and done, I can really only do readings, not the 3-card ones, but the large regular ones, only once or twice in a whole day. I don't have infinite energy to sit there and do that back to back to back. I just can't. It doesn't work that way. So imagine, you know, doing all that work and making like $20 to $40 for 8 hours of all of this very draining work. That's not fair to me. That's not good. That's just not good. I can't sustain that. You know what I mean? And then we have the hangover. The psychic hangover rivals any morning after drinking binge I've experienced. Like, it's so bad. For me, it's an excruciating headache, like right in the front of my brain, like behind my third eye. It's throbbing. It feels like my brain is going to leak out my eyeballs. Light is the devil. It's terrible. It sounds like a migraine. It's not a migraine. I don't get migraines. I barely get headaches. It's just, I don't know. It's always been like that. But after a day of doing lots of readings, like if I'm doing it in person and I'm at a store or I'm at, you know, a festival or something and I do a bunch, I feel so out of it and so drained. My ears won't stop ringing. I'm like super hungry and also way too ill to think of eating. I'm so thirsty that it's like I've never even had a glass of water. You know, everything just kind of sucks. And that's what happens when you overextend yourself. That doesn't happen after every single reading, of course. It's not a daily occurrence to totally overextend myself beyond my capabilities. Except, how many of us, you know, who be hustling, overextend ourselves in the name of our work on an incredibly regular basis? I'm sure a bunch of you that are listening right now get like 4 hours of sleep a night, live off of Red Bull or coffee, just because you're making your dreams come true. A bunch of psychics are doing that too, with that hangover. And that sucks. Super sucks. But it is worth it. It is worth it because someone who really wants to do this work knows what's involved, and it's worth it. And it's not just monetarily worth it, but without the monetary support, they couldn't continue to do it. They couldn't, you know, do the things that they need to do afterwards to make them feel better, you know, get food, get water, have a safe place to lay down in the dark, that kind of thing. Fortunately for those scam psychics, they ain't getting no hangover. I would never say that working in any service or retail job is a breeze. It doesn't matter what you're doing because it just is. It's hard. But psychics who are not psychic can do a lot more readings in a day. These psychics often seem like a cheaper option at first. A reading from them might be like half the price. And you know what? What's the problem? It's going to be fun. It's going to be the same length of time. But it might not be legit. Oh well, no problem, right? But what if you believe it? What if they scare you? What if they tell you your parent is going to die or your partner is currently hiring a hitman to kill you or an ex-flame has put such a powerful curse on you that it's endangering your family? What if they are then, of course, the only person in the whole world who can help you, but, you know, it'll cost you some money? Don't laugh. The people that fall for these scams, don't laugh at them. They are victims. And I know it sounds wild, and that might sound so obviously a scam, but it's not. It's not their fault, because that could happen to anyone. The people that run these scams are good at what they do, scamming. And they can convince you of just about anything. It literally is their superpower. You know, they've got that charismatic cult leader type superpower. And it can get to anyone. We're all vulnerable at times to anyone who can maybe help us with something that's hurting us or bothering us or making our life incredibly difficult. A legitimate psychic won't really do anything like that. So a legitimate psychic will not then continue to ask you for ever increasing money to try and break that curse or prevent that death or something, which is what a lot of these scam artists do. They'll never tell you that they are the only psychic who can help you. They might even recommend someone more suited to your particular issue. I once got a tarot reading by someone who does not have mediumship abilities. And at the end, she was like, you know, I really think you need to talk to somebody who can communicate with spirits. And she gave me a few names of mediums that she personally knows, right? They're her friends. But she's like, I think you might need a medium to talk to about this. Like, there's something there that I can't quite break through. You know, that's just not my area of expertise. Super helpful, right? Because she cared about helping me. They will never actively try to scare you during a reading. Just they won't. If you get scared in a reading and you say something and that reader doesn't instantly, you know, take a beat to try to make you feel more comfortable, even though you're on the clock or they're right in the middle or they're irritated or whatever, it's because they don't care about you. And they could be just a shitty reader or a shitty person, or it could be a scam. But if you get really scared during a reading and you're like, whoa, I need you to hold up, and they don't, get out of there. That's no good. That is not a good place to be. That is not a good reading. That person doesn't care about you. And in my opinion, like I said earlier, any psychic that tells you that they know 100% for certain that a person is dead better have seen that body or committed the crime themselves. Because there's just no way. This is not something a real psychic will just pull out of nowhere. By the way, that daughter you haven't seen in 3 weeks since she went off to college is definitely dead and in this room. Like, get real, lady. But people do that. Sylvia Brown pulled that fucking shit all the time. She constantly told people that their loved ones were dead and they were not. Do not trust that particular statement. Now, I don't want to say that the psychics that seem extra cheesy are definitely fake, because they might not be. They might just love the cheesy aesthetic. I do. I love everything cheesy and ugly. You guys know that. I love the cheesy aesthetic. I love the neon signs. I love the palmistry displays. You know, I love big plush curtains and all of that stuff. I love that stuff. And because I've worked at witch stores, I also know for an absolute fact that there are really cool professional old lady psychics in my city who absolutely read with a crystal ball. And I know that because I sold them that crystal ball. And how awesome is that? Some people just like the vibe. But that doesn't mean that they're trying to scam you or that they're in any way associated with these, what I call psychic parlors versus genuine psychic readers. Unfortunately, aside from these things that might sound kind of obvious, there's no real way to know right off the bat if the psychic that you're seeing is legitimate. The only true difference between these two very similar industries and these two very similar workers, just like in all magic, is the intention. One person or one industry is either entertaining you with an act to get paid, or they're trying to defraud you. Either way, their intention is to get paid. Full stop. The other is trying to help you using a skill that they've honed and perfected over time. Maybe they're also trying to entertain you, but they want to help. And they get paid to do that so that they continue to do that work. The intention there is helping you and empowering themselves to live the life they want. That's it. The intention between the two things is very, very different. That's not always obvious, but you have to trust your gut. You know, if you have gut feelings when you walk into any sort of psychic reading situation and you instantly feel like this is not the place to be, this is scary, I don't get good vibes off this person, get out. Even if you paid, get out. You know what? I'm more than willing to just be like, yeah, whatever. I lost some money. That happens. if you go to a psychic and, you know, you're skeptical or you want to learn a little bit more to make yourself feel more comfortable, you can totally ask questions. Now, I mean, you can read reviews all over the internet. You can talk to others who've been to that psychic and then be really honest in your appointment. You know, don't try and test them on weird, like, personal trivia or or hold back facts that you think they should just know. And know that there's always a possibility that this experience could be a waste of your money. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's a scam. I've totally paid for readings by psychics and readers who seemed awesome, and they were really nice people. But the reading itself just was not helpful. The information wasn't right, or it wasn't delivered the right way, or just whatever. I don't instantly feel scammed when that happens, like, give me my 60 bucks back. I feel like, well, okay, well, there's two ways that could have gone, and it went the way I wouldn't prefer. Shit happens. I still like the experience of having my cards read, even when the reading sucks. Honestly, I do. It's like how some people love to sit back and get their nails done or get a haircut, and it's just absolute euphoria to have this other person pampering you a little bit. It's a treat. It's a treat. You get to do something for yourself. You get to support an entrepreneur, especially those from marginalized groups, like I mentioned earlier in the episode. And, you know, it's a treat to just see someone work, to see a psychic do what they do. I might not have gotten what I wanted necessarily, but I don't consider any of my money wasted, and I don't consider myself scammed. It's just, it could always happen. It could always happen that you're not happy with the service you got. You can totally complain if you want, and maybe you have good cause to complain, and every business will deal with that differently. But you don't instantly have to feel like you were scammed just because the reading wasn't exactly what you wanted or even what you needed. Now, if you are a spiritual person, kind of like I am, who has any sort of psychic ability, if you read tarot cards or you're a medium or whatever, and you think, yeah, I want to start providing this as a service to others, not just reading my own tarot cards, right? I'm going to read other people's tarot cards and I'm going to help. There are a lot of people that will read cards for free, and not just for friends. They offer this service totally free of charge. And that's great. If you know one of those people, I'll hit that up. But I want you to remember all of that stuff I said before about how my negative greed negatively impacted the people in my life, right? I was so not greedy that I was greedy. I was so not greedy that I just needed more from people, and I didn't really expect them to do anything for me, but they really felt that. They felt like they were obligated to help. You don't want to be that person. You know, if you have a family and a job and you like doing the readings and you want to do it for free because you want to help people, that's awesome. But when the readings start taking over, you know, hanging out with your family, picking up your kids from school, getting to your paying job, getting the groceries done, when those free readings start to impede your life and start to negatively impact, like, your friends, your family, your coworkers, what you're doing there is a disservice to all of you. And the way to correct that is not to just stop giving readings. It's to make sure that you are either putting up the right boundaries to only read for certain amounts of time, making sure that it works within your schedule, still putting yourself and your family and everything like that first, or you need to charge money, and it needs to become your job, and it needs to help support your life and your lifestyle. And that's just it. You can't spiritual work that makes your life less good sort of defeats the purpose, as far as I'm concerned. Oh my goodness. The witch that I am today would absolutely not exist if I didn't get paid for doing this work. I would be, you know, 3 years behind. I wouldn't have access to the books and the materials that I do. I wouldn't have access to the other witches that I do that I can talk to, because I got that through doing this work. And sometimes doing this work costs money. I pay for hosting. I pay for new tarot decks. I pay for the books to teach me how to use that stuff. I pay for pendulums. I pay for space and time. I pay vendors' fees. I pay blah, 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 blah. And if I was paying all of that money from the money I don't have and not getting anything in return, I would have to stop doing this. And for someone who feels like they're doing this kind of work because it puts something good out into the world and it helps people and you want to be of service in a way that you can, that you have skills, that's just not... That's not an option. It's not an option so much to stop. Like I said, this work is my life's purpose, and I know a lot of people, once they, you know, discover or start exploring their spirituality, it's like there's this thread, unbreakable thread. You cannot stop living that and studying that and immersing yourself in that. It's very hard. And if you feel like you can use your psychic gifts to help somebody and you feel like you have to help those people, you're going to. And that's where it becomes exploitative on the readers, these psychics. Anytime you see someone giving away free individual readings, if they say it's free or you can pay me what you want, for the love of God, put a dollar. If it's all you have, put a dollar in there. Give them a little something. What you're doing there, much like the people who support my podcast. I love my little, shameless self-promotion. But just like that, you are not just supporting that particular reader and that particular reading. You are supporting all of the other people in that reader's life who also kind of depend on them getting paid for their skills, you know? Because you gave them a little bit of money for the reading, you know, they didn't have to take a whole bunch of extra time or to get the money to buy the groceries this week. You know what I mean? They didn't have to work overtime at their paying job to make up for the fact that they spent 3 hours with you giving you psychic advice. They get to play with their kids a little bit because you gave them some money, so they don't have to work so much this week. That means something. That is a very good way to use your money and think of where you put your money. Perfectly in keeping for the theme of today's show, which is fuck witches, get money, right? I'm sure many of you noticed that in the middle of the episode, there was a little advertisement. I'm so excited about that ad. So I just want to thank Kim again from Clever Kim's Curios. I've been thanking her, you know, to herself. But I've been thanking her because I'm very, very excited to be able to advertise an actual witchy practitioner who sells witchy items that are really, really cool, really gorgeous, and just have really, really good energy to them already. I'm really excited to be able to advertise that, and I hope, especially after listening to this episode, that you guys will check out her website and buy some stuff. Like I said in the commercial, you get a little discount if you use my coupon code. Cool, right? If you have a business and you want to advertise on the Fat Feminist Witch, you can go to advertisecast.com/fatfeministwitch and check out the prices there and the plans that I have. That's exactly what Kim did. So thank you so much, Kim, and thank you to everyone who goes and checks her business out after this. I think that was everything that I had planned to say today, and I hope that I got my message across, that you don't have to feel bad about getting paid for your spiritual services, because getting paid enables you to be that awesome person that the other people in your life depend on, that the planet depends on. You know, you're able to be a better version of yourself because that's just one less thing that you have to be concerned about, one less thing that you have to be tired over, that you have to be stressed over, that you have to, you know, take more important emotional time out of, you know, to deal with. So I hope this convinces you that you and your work are worth being paid, because you are. That's right. We all are, friends. That's right. Super fun. So thank you so much for tuning in to the Fat Feminist Witch podcast for today. If you want to find out more about me or more about any of the topics I discussed here, you can go to thefatfeministwitch.com. Check out everything there. You can visit me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest by searching The Fat Feminist Witch. And if you want to financially support The Fat Feminist Witch, you can, of course, choose to advertise through the show. You can go to my website and click the little button that says Buy Me a Coffee, or you can click the little button that says Become a Patron. And for $10 a month, you can join my other Patreon subscribers in my private group, which I call The Witch and Bitch. Like a stitch in bitch, but with witches. And in there, we do live meetups. We read a featured book. We deal with featured subjects and we learn about stuff all together. There's just lots of extra content. And a lot of the stuff that we do in the group really influences the episodes that I put out later and the books that I read and the topics I study. So joining the group is a really good way to, you know, make sure the stuff that you care about is being heard here on the Fat Feminist Witch. I hope you all have a beautiful weekend. There's a long weekend coming here because Canada Day is on Monday, and then Independence Day is coming up, you know, 3 days after that for the rest of you. Next Thursday, so a week from now, you have Independence Day there in the States. So I hope you all have a wonderful Independence Day, even though your government is keeping tiny children in concentration camps. And I hope all of us Canadians have a very wonderful Canada Day, despite the fact that our government consistently lies about giving a shit about Indigenous peoples and is building a pipeline through their country. Yeah, that's about as positive as I can be. I tried really hard to even sound that festive. Have a wonderful weekend. Have a wonderful long weekend. Have a wonderful Canada or Independence Day. And going forward, I hope you all remember to, you know, fuck witches, get money.